go back and read books again, books that I have loved. Sometimes the rereading is nostalgic. Sometimes I realize I no longer identify with the characters the way I once did. And sometimes I'm astonished to find that the rereading reveals a whole new story to me. I make a habit of rereading To Kill a Mockingbird every few years. Each time I read it again, a new facet of the story comes into view for me, and I fall in love with it all over again. I've loved Scout as someone who identifies with her, as a big sister to her, as someone who wishes she had a mama to love on her. I've loved Jim through the eyes of a sibling and through the eyes of the mother of a son. My last reading of the book had me enthralled with Atticus and how he struggled to care for his children alone and explain a world that in so many ways is inexplicable. So, when I was rereading today's gospel with different eyes from the last time this story came up in our lectionary cycle, I was struck by John's screaming out at the people around him. John, who from the very beginning was in on what God was doing with Jesus. John, who leapt in his mother's womb when she was in the presence of Mary while Jesus was still in her own womb. John, whose fire and zeal led him to tell people to get ready, that God was going to do something new. In today's gospel, John starts not at a level 10, but at a level 15. You brood of vipers, who has warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Whew, he's on fire. Well, reading John as a parent of two teenagers gives these words a whole new meaning to me. I now know this emphatic need to have others listen to me. You brood of vipers at my house comes out a little bit like, I tell you what, you had better get yourselves together. I know something. John had crazy hair and wore camel skins and ate bugs and honey while doing this, and I have bedhead and flannel PJs and exist on a diet consisting mostly of coffee while doing it. But John's story and mine diverge a bit as the gospel goes on. In the gospel, the people ask John what it is that they should be doing after he starts fussing at them. This rarely happens when I'm fussing at my teenagers. They don't ask, oh, mother, what is it we should do now? It never happens, actually. But John gives them some immediate things they need to do right now, right then. Share what you can. Do right by others. Don't be a bully. And John seems pretty insistent that this is something they should do right then and there. Get yourselves together right now. Well, there's a lot of right-nowing in this season. And some of it has to do with the fluff and hustle and bustle of what we have turned this season into. The lines at Target are full of people getting stuff done right now. And I'm pretty sure I saw a woman at a bakery cry when she took another order from somebody who needed like a bajillion cupcakes right now. And heaven help anyone behind the counter in a retail store because people need things right now. Obviously, this was not the kind of right now thing John was talking about. But right now, a lot of things are happening that John was asking of his listeners. This week, we delivered carloads of gifts for five families in Goochland County. The boxes of donated items are filling up for Goochland Cares. Right now, our outreach contributions are being put to work across this county and in the city. Right now, a team of our parishioners is preparing for a mission trip to Ecuador. I know so many of us are engaged in helping others right now in so many ways. And all of this is so good. But there is another side of right now. And it rings as real and as true as all the good things being done in these days. Right now there are people hurting. Right now, there are people feeling alone and lost. Right now, there are people grieving because they miss a loved one. Right now, there are people fleeing their homelands in fear. Right now, there are people without enough food to eat. Right now, everything is not lit in the warm, glowy lights of Christmas. But the promise of Advent is that this painful side of the right now is not a permanent situation. Get ready. God is going to do something new. That's why the people following around listening to John were showing up. It wasn't that their current situations were glorious and wonderful. They had needs that were not being met. They were hungry. They were scared. They were enslaved. They were in fear. And the way John was talking, it felt like he just might be on to something. And he was. Several months ago, I was in the nursery with Meg Zimmer, our wonderful nursery coordinator. A child in the nursery lamented that he couldn't do something, and Meg quickly replied, "Not yet. You can't do that just yet, but you will be able to." Just not yet. What a brilliant response to a child and to all of us. Not just yet. Advent reveals the beauty and the tension between the right now and the not just yet. The promise of Advent points us to the beauty of seeing God in our midst, of love being revealed in the birth of Christ, in God's radical insistence that love wins right now and forever. And it reminds us that there is more to come, more to be done for love to win. We live in a time of great sorrows for the world and in our own lives, places and hearts where love has not yet made things right, made things whole. And in Advent, we remember the promise that God will indeed do something new in all of this. The strange thing to me is that the tension can be cause for joy, great joy. Joy for what has been revealed and joy for what is to come. This Sunday on our Advent wreaths at home, we light pink candles for Gaudete Sunday, or the Sunday in which we are to rejoice. This is a little lost on us now because unlike centuries ago, when this was a more penitential season, we spend most of December joyfully celebrating rather than solemnly preparing for the birth of Christ and the coming of a new kingdom. We all experience some kind of manufactured joy at this time of year. It's inevitable. It's just baked into our culture at this point. But there's also a joy that lives a little bit closer to the surface during this time of year. The joy that has nothing to do with anything we can mass produce and everything to do with Jesus. There's a great gospel song that I love. The words are, "This joy I have, the world didn't give it to me. This joy I have, the world didn't give it to me, and the world can't take it away. Who gave it to me? Nobody but Jesus. Nobody but Jesus." The joy that we are called to revel in this season is not of this world and cannot be man-made. It is given and created by nobody but Jesus, the baby we are waiting on who changes everything, the kingdom of love he brings into our midst right now and the one to come, the one that is not just yet. When have you felt that kind of joy in your life, the kind you know is a gift? When I think of the times I have felt great joy in my life, I'm grateful that there have been many. The birth of my children, gatherings and special times with family and friends, my own triumphs, or better yet, watching the triumphs of those I love. So many happy memories. But I was surprised by a memory that kept surfacing as I was thinking about it, because this memory, at its face value, should be sad. Not long before my maternal grandmother died, I was visiting her at the hospital. She had fallen and fractured her hip, but a whole host of other problems unfolded as her body was simply unable to recover from the injury. When I arrived there one day, the nurses had gotten her up and had her seated in a chair. She had lost the ability to speak clearly, but we greeted one another with I love yous and hugs. I didn't know quite what to do. We couldn't sit and chit-chat. She was not super comfortable in her chair, and it was just hard and awkward. Then I saw her brush on the table. "Mama, would you like me to brush your hair?" She smiled and nodded, and so I did. I brushed her beautiful hair. She had had gorgeous hair for years. People would tell her that she looked like the TV star Linda Evans, and she would smile and then tell them that, in fact, Linda Evans looked like her because she was much older than Linda Evans. I stood in that dim hospital room and brushed my mama's hair. And for just a little while, I don't think she was in as much pain. Her face eased, and she closed her eyes, and she kept smiling. And we were happy there for a bit, truly joyful, when on all accounts, we had no reason to be. There was such a pull between the pain and sorrow in that moment and the knowledge that God indeed was soon going to do something new for her. And in that tension, that was the source of joy. So much love and hope were revealed in that simple connection. Nobody but Jesus. It was nobody but Jesus that brought that joy and love to us that day. In today's letter to the Philippians, we are reminded to rejoice that the Lord is near and not to worry. Don't worry. That is way easier said than done. At this point in my life, when I'm reading this letter, I'm pretty sure I have some legit worries. Worries for my children, for our future, worries about the times we live in. Honestly, telling me not to worry makes me want to sit down and have a come apart. For me, it is near impossible to not worry. And I suspect the same is true for many of you. But when I think about Mama and that hospital room and the joy and peace that surpassed our human understanding, focus begins to come. And I'm reminded that we should listen to John and be a little bit less like vipers. Share what we can. Do right by others. And above all, get ready, because God is going to do something new in our lives and for this world. Jesus will close the gap between the right now and the not just yet in his time. And although this surpasses human understanding, John was sure of it, and I am too. This joy, this life, this love, this promise of what is and what is to come, from where does it come? Nobody but Jesus.